So we've been talking about going from just occupying something to owning it. And I've used a few different analogies in that and spoke into a few of those this morning. And sort of talked about the feeling that some of you would relate to, where you've gone from, you know, renting a home to owning a home. You know, when you're renting a home, you feel some level of obligation. You know, you've got to try and keep the thing clean because people likely only organise house inspections and things like that. And there's an obligation to meet certain standards, but you're not particularly invested in the future of that property. You're not thinking about what it can be, what it can become, where it can go. You don't necessarily have a dream or a vision for that. But if you've gone from, you know, renting, being a tenant, to being an owner, suddenly you feel very different about it. You think, wow, imagine what this could be. What could we do with this? And, you know, my wife, Alex, who apologises for not being here tonight, we've got some little boys that they're better at home tonight. we've got our house. She has so much vision for it. She just starts telling me this stuff. And I'm inspired by vision, but all I can hear is ka-ching, 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 ka-ching. And after she's done that, she says, well, we could put this on here and we can open that out over there. And then she finishes that and then she starts on another room. And there is just no shortage of vision and ideas for what our property could be. So God bless her. But it's amazing. But if we were, you know, if we were just occupying that property or we were tenants in that, she wouldn't be talking that way. Because, you know, that's she wouldn't feel empowered, she wouldn't feel inspired to have that sort of vision for a rented property. And I shared this morning a little bit about the empowerment that we've had as we've moved into a new property a couple of years ago. And we sold a little property in Lenner Valley, and we sold it for about five times what we paid for it. Now, that's, you think, wow, and everybody knows, well, that's not that exciting because what you buy costs five times what it did 20 years ago too, which is just how it is. But, you know, that's about where the market goes. But it was the choices we made then that actually empowered us and gave us the freedom to look at options in the future. And right now, tonight, we are, as a church, are in this amazing facility that we're going to develop and God is going to use, you know, to bless and connect people and make a difference in Hobart and particularly, you know, really get involved in what's going on here in the Northern Suburbs. There's a whole lot of things. Now, but we can do that because years ago, people that came before me made a choice to go from being tenants to owners. As Energizer Church, we were a little church, and we owned a property over in Lindisfarne. It's now a house. It shows you the difference in what God has done. And then the church started to grow, and then we thought, oh, we needed more space. So we went from being there to being tenants. We started to meet in Rosny College, and that was a lot of fun. It was a great season, but with that came problems. Like, we had lots of things going on in the church, lots of exuberance and stuff like that. We'd do things. I remember one day we were moving stuff around to do something, and you know, I was sort of, you know, directing a whole lot of young guys, and someone grabbed this sort of wall that were moving from one place to another and sort of dragged it across all this parquetry floor. And I can still remember now this big gouge sort of going, and you know, that was one of the nails in the coffin when our previous pastor actually had to see, he had to go and see the principal, and he said, Dave, he said, I felt like I was back in the principal's office again. And you know, it was because, you know what, we were tenants. We had a responsibility to look after that, but we had no determination over the future of that venue. you know, and they'd put on productions at the school because they're a school and that's what they do. Great. But that meant that, you know, it didn't work for us. And we chose to go from there, and the leadership that at the time I wasn't part of the decisions that were made there. And we bought the property in Belle Reve. And it was that decision that actually empowered us when we felt like we were moving into another season to realise what we've got here. I just want to encourage you, you know, God doesn't want you in a position where you're stuck, where you don't have options, and where you're disempowered. He actually wants you to own what is around you so that you are empowered. And there's this verse, and well, I was talking about this morning too, and I'm going to springboard in some other thoughts in a sec. But Joshua, the great general who had actually led Israel into the promised land, who had actually done the courageous things that had got 3 million people across the Jordan River, that had you know, taken Jericho, that had taken all these cities that were there, that done incredible things. He was a great general. And you could imagine he would have got through that, and he was old and he was tired, and God says, Joshua, you're old and you're tired. And he said, But you haven't actually finished what I asked you to do. He said, You've done some amazing stuff, but you actually haven't taken ownership of the cities. He said this, and the Lord said to him, you're old and advanced in years, and there remains much of the land yet to be possessed. So you know what? His armies had come through, and they'd taken over and they'd destroyed any military opposition. But if those cities and the land were not immediately inhabited by people, well, the remnants of the people that lived there before would resettle and would take ownership and would bring control with their culture and their values, and so essentially they would lose what they had. And God was saying, hey, let's not settle for a partial victory. Let's not settle for partial inheritance. Let's not settle for just nearly getting to what I've got for you. And so often we settle for a partial victory. So often we don't go right through with what God is giving us. We, you know, he opens a door and we think, wow, and we think, oh yeah, that's good enough. And he's actually saying there is more. I don't want you to be a tenant in this thing. I don't want you to feel like there are other things that are controlling you. I want you to be empowered to be a kingdom person where I've placed you. And he wants us to not be contained. He actually wants us to step into ownership. So occupancy may demand responsibility, like the Leonis of this world coming and doing their inspections. But with ownership comes the power to determine destiny and influence the future. Do we want to own, or do we just want to occupy? Why not step into ownership? Own your space. Have a kingdom influence on the destiny of yourself and others that are around you. In the parable of the talents, Jesus illustrated that he wants us to take ownership of what we've been given. And if you want to check it in your Bibles or you want to look on the screens, it's great. I'm going to read the whole parable now. Matthew 25:14-30. It says, again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by a story of a man going on a long trip. He called his servants together and entrusted them with his money. While he was gone, he gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities, and then he left on his trip. The servant who received the 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earn 5 bags more. The servant with 2 bags of silver went to work, and he earned 2 more. But the servant who received 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, their master returned from their trip and called them to give account for how they had used the money. The servant whom had been entrusted 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest, and I have earned 5 more. So a pretty good return. You know, he doubled his money. The master was full of praise. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. The servant who had received two bags of silver came forward, and the master said, he said to the master, you gave me two bags of silver to invest, and I've earned two more. The master said, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. Then the servant with the one bag of silver came and said, master, I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops that you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the ground. Look, here it is, a whole lot of it. You've got it back. But the master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. If you knew that I harvested crops that I didn't plant and gathered crops that I didn't cultivate, why didn't you just deposit the money in the bank? At least you would have gotten some interest on it. Then he ordered, take the money from this servant and give it to the one with 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they have given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But listen to this. From those who do nothing, even what they have will be taken away. Now throw this useless, it's pretty fierce this stuff. Now throw this useless servant into the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. So in this parable, Jesus illustrates that he actually wants us to take ownership of what we have rather than just being custodians. So if you like, you've got this guy here. And he's been given a bag of silver. And he thinks, wow, that's a big responsibility, because I feel like my boss is a bit of a tyrant. I feel like my boss is going to be really hard on me if I don't get this right. So what does he do? Out of fear, he takes this money and he says, you know, well, it's too much for me. It's too heavy for me. So I don't even want to look at it. It's just making me feel awkward. So he goes and he digs a hole and he puts it in the ground and in a safe spot that nobody can find it. The master comes back and he gives it to him. And this is one of these parables that is sort of like a bit harsh, isn't it? Do you read the parables sometimes and think, man, that's harsh? Jesus, you're meant to be loving and you're telling these parables that are so harsh? They sort of hit really hard. Wasn't the one bag servant doing his best given the circumstances? Maybe he lived in fear of the master. Maybe he'd made mistakes before. Maybe he didn't have the investment experience of the others. Maybe he was down on confidence. Maybe he didn't have a great background. Maybe his upbringing wasn't real good. There could have been a whole lot of factors about this guy. And yet, Jesus, when he tells this story, illustrates a really strong point. He was given custody of a bag of silver. You see, a custodian, if you like, maintains something normally on behalf of an owner. Whereas the true owner assumes authority and makes decisions and has the capacity to determine destiny and influence the future. And Jesus even went a little further, showing that the servant who buried the money in the ground and would have appeared in one sense to be a safe custodian had actually been unfaithful with what he'd given. His master's intent was that what he'd given him would be actually developed. And he'd given that servant the authority and the ownership to do just that. And in the few minutes I've got left tonight, I want to talk about what does it take. This morning we talked about what it means to move from occupancy to ownership. What does it take to develop a three-bag spirit rather than a one-bag spirit? What does it take to develop that spirit where it's like the master says, hey, here's three bags, and I'm going to give you some more? What does it take to have that sort of spirit as opposed to that spirit where I've just got this one bag and I think I'm probably going to lose what I've got? Well, number one, I think let's not be overwhelmed by the weight of responsibility. Let's not be overwhelmed by the weight of responsibility. Who's felt at times so responsible that it's just really hard to carry the responsibility? Anyone been there? Wow, Paul talked about that in the New Testament. He said, actually, there's a lot of stuff I think about. There's a lot of stuff I worry about. I worry about getting arrested and beaten, and I worry about what's going to happen. And then he says, on top of that, I feel this weight of responsibility of all the churches I've planted and how they're going and what's going to happen. And anyone been there? You know, it's like a weight of responsibility. And this, you see, the thing is, that's a reality. But what Jesus illustrates here is that the money was ultimately the master's. You see, the guy that got the one bag of silver, he was overwhelmed by the weight of the responsibility of one bag of silver. But the money was ultimately the master's. He was taking the weight and he was carrying the risk. You see, that guy went away and he said, look, I'm going on a trip. I'm not going to talk to you. And you know, they didn't have, when this story was told, nobody was thinking about mobile phones and, you know, real-time online banking and all that. So no one was thinking about all that stuff. It was like, here's the money. I'm going to disappear. You're going to have no idea where I'm going, how long I'm going to be away, when I'm going to get back. But I'm going to be away for a fair while. Here it is. See what you can do with it. And the one bag servant couldn't see anything but the weight of the responsibility. But somehow the other two servants actually, they didn't look at that. And they weren't overwhelmed by the weight of what they'd been given. They actually were inspired and motivated by the opportunity of what they'd been given rather than being overwhelmed by the weight. Now Jesus actually wants us to function like that. He's put gifts and talents and opportunity in front of us all. And he doesn't want you to be overwhelmed by the weight of it. He actually wants you to be freed and inspired and excited and function in the opportunity of what you've been given. See, what a bag of opportunity became so heavy that the opportunity became a burden. And he couldn't look at it anymore. You know, he had other things he wanted to do, so what did he do? He buried it. What have we buried because it's too heavy? Now, that's probably a bit heavy if we starting to dig in that, but what are we buried because it's too heavy? And I bet as I look around here tonight, there'll be people that, you know, God has called you into things. There have been, you know, that thing you've carried, that prophetic word, that thing you've started to do, and, you know, it started off as an opportunity, and it started off as a joy, and somehow along the way it's become a burden, and it's become hard to carry, and it's like, okay, I've just got to bury that thing. You know, I used to share my faith. I had a gift of evangelism, and I used to get out, and I was there, but I've had some disappointments. I was in a church somewhere and, you know, they didn't understand me. And I have buried that gift. But he didn't need to be overwhelmed. You see, if the master didn't believe in him, he wouldn't have given him the bag of silver. Master was prepared to carry the risk and take the weight of the risk. You know, like Jesus, in the things that he's given you, he says, hey, I'll take the risk. I'll carry the burden. I'll do that. You know what? I want you to be free to use what you've been given and free to fly in that. Of course, yeah, we've got to be smart. But you know, Jesus is saying, you know, don't be overwhelmed by the responsibility. So how do we develop a three-bag spirit? I think this is probably the core of everything in this parable. Get to know the heart of the master. Get to know the heart of the master. Listen to what it says. Then the servant with one bag of silver came to the master. He said, I knew you were a harsh man. And obviously, if he said that, this guy's a pretty sharp businessman. This guy's tough. This guy doesn't suffer fools, you know. Like, he actually, you know, he gets things done. He makes it happen, and he was obviously good at making money. And so the servant said, you know, I know you're like that. I knew you were a harsh man, harvesting crops that you didn't plant, gathering crops that you didn't cultivate. So I was afraid I would lose your money, so I hid it in the ground. Look, here's your money back. You see, he feared the master because he didn't know the master's heart. You see, if the master was going to be that harsh on this guy, he wouldn't have given him the money in the first place. And you see the response. He said, you know what, actually, I wanted you to take a risk. I actually wanted you to know that I believed in you enough to give you this. So I didn't want you to be paralyzed by fear of not pleasing me. I just wanted you to step in to what I'd given you. And the other two took risks and had great success because they knew the master's heart. They understood that he believed in them. They were empowered to make decisions and take risks and multiply what they'd been given. When we know the master's heart, we're not motivated by fear, but we're freed through his love. Maybe you know you've got certain talents. It could be all sorts of things. You know, you could have musical talents. You could have leadership. You know, you might find, at work I get in and I lead. It just seems to come naturally to me. And then there's this sort of disconnect between what you do there and the way that God wants to use you in his kingdom. And maybe for somebody else, it's hospitality, sport, finance, administration, teaching, encouragement, a whole raft of things that we could actually have. And we're sort of, you know, we sort of occupy that space. Every now and again, we have a few people around, and it's like, and people say, oh, you're so good at this. But, you know, you sort of feel like, oh, but I'm not quite owning it. I'm not in that space. I'm not flowing in that thing. And it's like, you feel like if I step out, I might not get it right. And through fear of that bag of opportunity becomes a burden. And then we stop doing the dinner parties, or we stop saying, you know what, I want to sort of develop my gift and be part of the worship team, or I want to just get out there and encourage people, get around people, because you know what, like, you know, it just might not work out. And that thing becomes a burden. You see, the more that you know the master's heart, the less fear will control and paralyze you. Perfect love expels fear. The more you know the master's heart, the more that you know that you're empowered to own and use what you've been given. Let's get to know our master's heart. Let's get to know the heart of Jesus. Because you know what? He is absolutely for you. What he's given you, he's not wanting to call you to account right now and say, oh, yeah, you tried this and it failed. Yeah, you tried this and it didn't work. You tried this and you made a fool of yourself. No, that's not what Jesus is doing at all. He's saying, you know what, I believe in you. And come on, let's step out. Let's have a crack together. Let's get on board with this. And I'm with you all the way. And I know that you're going to succeed. Yeah, you might have a few failures on the way, but that's okay. I still believe in you. So how do we develop a three bags full spirit? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Do something. Do something. You know that famous grand final speech. Do something. Verse 29, to those who use well what they've given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. From those who do nothing, even what they have, but those who do nothing, even the little they have, will be taken away. It's sort of lose it or use it sort of principle. But as you read this, the thing that the master struggled with in all this more than anything else, because he gave all those guys according to their ability. He knew what they were capable of. And the thing that he struggled with, the thing that disappointed him wasn't somebody failing. It was that somebody actually did nothing. Somebody said, "Okay, I'm just gonna be a custodian of this. I'm gonna keep it safe. I'm gonna make sure it's not damaged, and I'm gonna give it back." Can anybody remember going and visiting maybe a nana or something like that? And they had their couch, and they sort of still had the plastic on it that it came with. Or I remember this, you know, I don't think you can buy cars like this now, but cars used to come with sort of plastic over the door trimmings and on the seats, and now I think when you get a car, that would all be taken off and it's all presented nicely, but you used to be able to buy them with that on there, and I used to work on cars, and every now and again a car would come in, and, you know, it was 7 years old, but it still had the plastic on the doors. Because, you know what, someone was trying to be a good custodian of it. They were trying to stop it, keep it. But you know, after a while, it just looked like, what's that dirty old plastic still on that car? Well, who wants to sit on a couch that's got plastic on it? The couch is designed to be laid on, sat on, have food spilled on, all that stuff. You know, like, the couch is there, you know, to do what it's called to be. It's meant to be comfortable. It's meant to be a place where you relax. It's, you know, it's not an art piece where you've got to have it covered up with plastic in case something happens to it, so it will be as good 20 years later as what it was when you got it. And sometimes we have that custodian mentality to life. We've been given things, and we're actually going to keep them rather than using them and investing. Hey, it doesn't matter if a few things get broken. It doesn't matter if we make a few mistakes. It doesn't matter if a few things don't work. You know, the heart of the master is, hey, do something. Heart of the master is, come on, let's get on with what we've got. Yeah, there'll be a few things that, but what we will build is going to be much more exciting than the plastic on the couch. You know, what we build is going to be much better than one bag of money out of the ground. He actually wants to take what we've got and multiply it. How is he going to do that? Because we're going to trust his heart. We're going to feel empowered to take what we've got and use it. And we're going to see the master multiply what we've got. We're actually going to own our space. We're going to go from occupancy to ownership. And God is going to do incredible things. Fear paralyzes, love empowers. A number of years ago, I was at Coles Bay with some friends, and we decided to climb Mount Amos. And Mount Amos, it's not that far up, but it's the first bit of it is a track, and then it sort of becomes a sort of a rock scramble with sort of really quite low level rock climbing. And the friends of ours that were going with us, they were quite young and fit, And we're going up, but this girl that was with us, Christy, she got sort of halfway up one of these small rock climbs, and she just got absolutely overcome with the fear of where she was. And she was paralyzed. Like, she couldn't go up, she couldn't go down. She was just sort of like clinging to this rock. And anybody that knows anything about rock climbing will tell you that that is the most dangerous place that you can possibly be when you're rock climbing. Because with rock climbing, I'm sounding like an expert, and I've only done a tiny little bit. But with rock climbing, it's, you know, you've actually, you don't sort of cling to the rock. You've actually, you've got to be able to hold with your toes and your fingers. You're not sort of pulling in. You've got to be out there where you've got the capacity to be able to move and go from one place to another. When it is dangerous is when you start to cling to the rock and you pull yourself in, because that's when rock climbers slip. And so often, you know, we're given this stuff and it's like we hold it in like this and we're like the rock climber on the ledge and suddenly we've looked around. You know, see, we're going to get through some of this project and we're going to start reaching people in around here. We're in the most multicultural suburb in Hobart. And you know, all of a sudden, we're going to have a look around and we're going to go, wow, gee, we're on a steep cliff. Whoa, what if we fell down there? What if that happened? And you know what? And if we start to grab on and we start to hold and we start to try and conserve all we've got, that is the most dangerous place we can possibly be. But you know, when we know the heart of our Father, He says, you know what? I love you and I believe in you and I've empowered you and you're going to go forward. All of a sudden it's like, I can do this. And we move out again. Suddenly, that hand that was paralyzed is actually free to let go of that tiny piece of rock that was holding on to and start to reach over and grab the next rock and start to move up. You see? Perfect love casts out fear. The most difficult person for Jesus to direct is the person who stopped. See, if Grant comes up here, can you do that for me, Grant? Can you sit cross-legged on the floor there? I know, that's probably... It might be a bridge too far. Yeah. But, you know, he's not that easy to move, is he? And if I said, hey, Grant, he's carrying a lot. If I said to Grant, hey, Grant, God, just come, you know. But if I get Grant to stand up, and if, like, can you just walk along there for me, Grant? You know what's going to happen. But, you know, like, I can push him that way. And he over there, you know, like, I can direct him right off the cliff. And because I'm a loving father, I would have given him a parachute and he would have just floated down so nicely. But when we're stuck, we can't move, we can't be directed, life gets stale, life gets boring, the kingdom feels like it's not doing what it's supposed to do, get annoyed with everybody else. If we want a three-bag spirit, let's do something. And it's not about doing the most amazing thing. It's about stepping into what's in front of you. Just taking what you've got now, starting to move.